All of her carved images will be laid flat. All of her presence will be consumed by fire. I will destroy all of her idols. As rewards of harlotry, she gathered them, and as the rewards of harlotry, they will be returned. Micah chapter 1, verse 7, that was. From the version of Yours Truly from 2003. That's our daily scripture for today, little children. I want to share a proverb today also. It's from Proverbs 10 and 18. It says, where there is one covering over hatred, there are lips of falsehood, and the one bringing forth a bad report is stupid. Proverbs 10 and 18. And now back to our study. In the article, The Ark of Urartu to the Orient Express, Part 2, Chapter 12, Paragraph 8 today. This is, there might be a little more to do after we finish Chapter 12, of course, because there are other notes that follow that, but this is one of the five last paragraphs of this article. Rumors of extraterrestrial landing may truly be believed. A gargantuan ship carrying a technologically very advanced culture from another world actually touched down on Earth. No embellishment to this story is needed to fit that fact. There are enough details yet uncovered to inspire forever. Had it not occurred, there would be no evidence of a ship. I did not really understand the saying, quote, if a tree falls in the forest and no one is in earshot, does it make a sound? End quote. Until I had learned, quote, if a tree falls to the south or if to the north, wherever the tree falls, there it proves to be, end quote. No matter what we may like to believe, we may be benefited by the credulity that accompanies faith negating the self. Truth is not our own creation. It is not from imagination, nor is it a human creation or result of some human theory. Predominant to self becomes the witness of earlier humans. Suspension of all disbeliefs, as love believes all things, is the means by which everyone may gain together. Win-win. In other words, truth is not created by the will of single individuals or families, but by the collective will of us. The Green family story is of us only a part. Is it a limit of imagination or an imagination of limits? Ancestral wisdom passed down through generations is much more powerful and heartening than anything we can imagine. I do not profess understanding of how or when these things are illuminated or brought to mind, but I am appreciative. The mudslide that brought Noah's Ark to its current position is evident and plainly seen on satellite photos. The legend that King Midas heard a voice in a dream saying to find some big anchor on his land and build a city there, which he found at Ankara Castle, is then a dropped stone. There is a difference between looking for facts to fit the truth and looking for truth to fit the facts as we see it. Truth is not dependent upon our personal view, never true. As we are investigating the Ark of Urartu, the true view is the one we search for and hopefully what we find. The truth will not be found if we insist on considering an alternate view that takes no stock of the relevant record. It is only when we open ourselves up to the possibility of the record being a correct or somewhat contorted version of true events that we start to ask Joe Two Rivers. That's the end of the paragraph for today. And you may recall that the idea about asking Joe Two Rivers is the idea of asking a very experienced person who knows the answers, right? So it's the idea of asking the experts, basically, by doing research and so on, into what the record is telling us, because we're interested in the facts of record, is the idea there. It just occurred to me, do we have a map open somewhere of the Ark site? Place of first descent. Anyway, I guess it's not that... We're not going to depend on that, but... It seems pretty evident that we know that the place where the Ark was found was at the extreme eastern border of Turkey, right? Bordering on the country of Iran. Can you see Iran there? I guess you can. Yeah. Iran's visible at the bottom of the map. But when you see where the Ark is, and you see that the anchor stones were dropped to the northwest of the Ark, and then the anchor stones, the Drogue stones. And then further to the northwest, more Drogue stones. So if we went back further to the northwest, we'd be going somewhere into the country of Turkey, and somewhere in that direction is the city of Ankara or Ankara, as there may be different pronunciations of it. I mean, I'd like to get a map and look at it, but I don't think it's that important because we don't know the exact path that the Ark took anyway, so it's not that important. But it's easy to visualize that this large anchor that was found by King Midas could have been one of the Ark Drogue stones that was dropped by Noah, or by whatever events took place that caused the anchor stone to be dropped. You know, we don't know. But there could have been another anchor stone dropped that was dropped near the city of Ankara at Ankara Castle, and that could be the explanation for that stone that it was said King Midas found in the legend that was telling that story. It really is interesting to see what else we can learn from the location of the Ark in its final resting place, after it, of course, also slid down the mountain some fairly short distance, I guess, compared to these other larger distances of the spacing between the Drogue stones as far as where they were found goes. But, you know, there was a mudslide after the Ark landed at some point, probably quite a bit later on, that caused the Ark to move down the slope of this mountain where it landed. And the mountain is, well, I want to look up Mashu, actually. I want to look up Mashu. By the way, a health update. I fully recovered now from the calcium overdose. I'm 100%, possibly 100% in everything, but I don't know. But, I mean, I'm more than 100% better than yesterday. I mean, the fact that I needed to stop eating vitamin D and calcium was actually a valid or the idea was a valid idea. I need to avoid calcium for a little while and be very careful with it, and vitamin D too. That's the cure. But I also learned another important thing about it. The cure for this kind of, you know, this is not hypercalcemia caused by calcium deficiency, where the bones are being dissolved and then the calcium is being put in the blood by the body because of the emergency of the calcium deficiency, causing the bones to be used as a supply of calcium. That's not what this is. This was me taking too much calcium in. And the antidote for that, to prevent absorbing calcium into your body, is, I found out by searching it, it's magnesium. It's the best natural suppressor of calcium. I'm trying to remember how they put it, but now I've gotten into a, let's see, into a digression here. No, I don't think I have it open anymore. I can't remember the word that was used to describe what it is. It's the best way. It's the best natural way to suppress the absorption of calcium is take more magnesium, because calcium, as I've studied many times, I wrote a big article about calcium where I didn't yet understand about vitamin K2. It's on the Will of Jehovah website at the top of the page, near the top. It's about nutrition, a life-saving guide, I think it's called, something like that. That article talks about calcium and vitamin D, and it talks about magnesium, but I didn't yet know about vitamin K2. But vitamin K2 has nothing to do with this conversation. Unless they're allergic to it, they can take vitamin K2 no matter what, in any circumstance, because it's got zero toxicity. Unless it's interacting with something, which is never, I've never heard of it, you know, so, but, you know, it's basically not the problem. The problem was, in this case, the calcium. But vitamin K2 is essential, always, okay? It's essential with vitamin D, always. K2 and vitamin D go together. That's something I didn't mention because I didn't know it yet when I wrote that article about nutrition. But that was many years ago now, sometime around 2000 or somewhere around there, some 20 years ago. So that article still has a lot of good information, but it's just not knowledgeable about vitamin K2. But coming back to calcium and magnesium, so calcium and magnesium are always taken in a 2-to-1 ratio. Now, I didn't know this, that if you take a lot of magnesium, you're going to slow down the absorption of calcium in the body. I don't know why that is, but that's what I learned. So I took took zero calcium yesterday, but I took more magnesium to try and, you know, I guess because they're always absorbed together, if you've overdosed on calcium, you need to boost your magnesium. Right? It makes sense, just to sort of balance it out. But apparently what that does is it counteracts the calcium in a very favorable way. And, well, you might need it also, because if you don't take magnesium, you might be experiencing constipation, I suppose, too, right? Now, I was taking xylitol, or gargling with it, and so therefore swallowing a little bit of it all many times every day. You know, I was swallowing a tiny bit of xylitol, and xylitol relieves constipation, so I might not have realized that I needed more magnesium because of that, because magnesium relieves constipation also. But in this case, magnesium is needed for the other reason of suppressing calcium, though. But the other thing that is necessary when you've overdosed on calcium is to drink a lot of water, which is pure water with no calcium in it. You know, essentially distilled water is what I was drinking yesterday and the day before. You know, I've been drinking a lot of water, And that's really solved the problem with the magnesium I took, so I feel quite remarkable. What were we going to look up here? The landing of the Ark, or... There's another picture of it. Mount Ararat with Yuzhangili to the south. And, oh, the Wall of Heaven, that's what I was looking up. Yeah, Mashu. Right. Wall of Heaven is labeled there, but it's hard to read because of the color red that was used. Let's just see. So look up Mashu. Oh. It's that crown-like, the crown-shaped cliff on the mountain, right? And it's the Wall of Heaven, that cliff, and the crown-shaped part of it is called Mashu. It becomes Moshi, drawn out of water. That's right, so Mashu even means basically the same thing as the name Moses, drawn. Moses was the prophet in the Bible who gave the Ten Commandments and wrote the first five books of the Hebrew Bible, right? The Torah. And it's still also the first five books of the Protestant Bible, too, that are written by Moses. But his name, drawn out of water, is the same as this name, Mashu, basically, the same name. Mashu, Moshe, Mashu, it's the same because the consonants are what matter to giving meaning. Drawn out of water. And in this case, of course, the Ark was drawn out of water. So that fits, in this case, rather well, as it does also in the case of Moses, where he was drawn out of water when the ark in which he was placed, it was a tiny ark that he was in which he was placed, right, to save his life, because Pharaoh had ordered all the children to be executed if they were of a certain age. The male children were ordered executed by Pharaoh. So, but he was saved, Moses was, by being put into an ark, a tiny ark. So it's the same, it's a very good analogy between that ark and Noah's ark, except Noah's ark is much bigger, and this word, Mashu, also occurs, and it looks like a diadem. It's the shape like a diadem that we see right here in the cliff. It looks like a crown in the rock. And this photo was from sometime in the 1970s, I believe. So this photo is, that rock cliff has been there since the time of Noah. Right? And Noah was born in 3882 BCE. 600 years before the deluge, compared to the birth of Moses, which was in 1573 or 72 BCE, 100 and, well, wait a minute now, what is it? Well, 120 years before his death, but Eighty years before the Exodus, right? 80 years before the Exodus, and then, of course, Israel wandered for 40 years in the wilderness until the death of Moses at the age of 120. But that was Moses, and this is Noah we're talking about here. With regard to Mashu, it's Noah and the landing with the other seven survivors here at Mashu on the mountain in the place today called Uzengili. There's the ark right there, lying in the mud. Right? Here the mud has collapsed away from the sides of it, so the gunwales of the ship are seen. The sides of the ship can be seen because the mud fell away during an earthquake that occurred. Very much, at a time, just while Ron Wyatt was investigating this site, and also he was praying for an earthquake at the time. That's the story. So that's that name, Mashu. Oh, right. What's this? Okay, let's close that. Here we go. So let's look for Mashu and see what else we find. In Akkadian, Mashu means twins. It's also the name of the first pitched camp at the place of first descent to the summit of Mount Nisir, which is another name of the mountain. This mountain, Nisir, I believe that might be the Arab name for it, Arabic, Nisir. We'll look that up too, but Misha is the word used in the Bible. Mashu and Misha, see, it's the same word again, with different vowels. So Genesis 10 and 30 calls it Misha. It's very important that we check this this scripture, I think. 10:30. Their place of dwelling came to extend from Misha as far as Sephar, the mountainous region of the east. So from Misha, Misha being the place of first descent of the ark, apparently. That's what it is. So this is remarkable because it corresponds to the word Mashu, or the wall of heaven, or the crown that is at the top of the mountain, called Mount Nisir, and that crown being at least part of the wall of heaven, if not the entire wall of heaven. And let's just look up. And also, Uzengili is also known as Mazar, or I'm not sure how to pronounce it, Mashar, perhaps, Mashar, which is similar to, or compare it with Mashu. So Uzengili is known as, basically, as Mashu. That's another important thing. It's Misha, the place where the Bible says was the beginning of civilization after the ark landed, after the deluge. Okay? I mean, it's quite significant. Now, let's look up Mount Nisir, because we did this in part one. This is from part one of the Ark of Urartu. On Mount Nisir, the ship stuck fast, and it did not slip away. Well, that's from the Epic of Gilgamesh, so that was from Sumerian. The Arabic book, the Quran, calls it Mount Judy, partly because they can't pronounce the hard K sound, so they can't say Mount Kuti, so they pronounce it Mount Judy. Oh, and Kordu. We learned that Kordu, isn't it interesting that Kordu is the mountain of the Kordians, and the Kurds were the people who were the first dwellers, or they're the people, they're named after Mount Kuti, apparently. The Kords, the people called the Kords, are named after the mountain Kuti. It was called Kuti, the mountain of the Kordians. But isn't it interesting how they would have gotten firewood from the ark? Because when the ark first landed, there were no trees. There was no wood. There was complete devastation. The only source of wood was the ark itself. But they could have burned the wood from the ark and kept themselves warm And isn't it interesting that we still today call a unit of wood, it's called a cord of wood, or a half cord, or a full cord, whatever. They call the amount of wood that you buy a cord. It's measured by the cord. Isn't that remarkable? We didn't mention that, but that's something I thought of yesterday. The cord of the wood, the cord as a unit of measurement for measuring firewood, specifically firewood. It's not just any old wood. They call a cord of wood. It's the measurement, the unit of measurement used for firewood. And that's what they would have been doing with the ark initially, would have been using it for firewood. And the people who lived there got the name Cordeans. Let's look up the word curd. We're not going with conventional research on where the name curd came from. We're looking to this more, much more ancient information that, you know, the Kurdish inhabited area was shown on this map by the CIA right here that we used to show where the ark was, and the Kurdish inhabited area was this large green colored area here in the middle of this map, with Noah's Ark in the extreme north of that area. Where do we get the word Kurd from in our article? The Gordians, also they're called, or the Cordeans, or the Kurds. Epiphanius wrote that the Ark remains existed in his day, which was 403 of the Common Era, and he said the Ark remains existed in the mountains of the Gordians, or the Kurds, or the Cordeans. So that is another use of the word Cordean. Related to the name Cootie Daggy. Cootie Daggy. Cootie. Mount Cootie is what Cootie Daggy means. Daggy is the Turkish word for mountain, as I understand it. Okay. Oh, it's also called Doomsday Mountain. That's right. Right. Wow. Asia means in Chinese second. And that was the second, of course, civilization that began on that mountain after the deluge. The second civilization, and not just civilization, but the second of all land life forms too. The second population of all of the life forms on Earth began also there on that mountain, not just human life forms. Well, that was chapter 3 of part 1 of the Ark of Urartu, right there. Right, but the Epic of Gilgamesh called it Mount Nisir. But isn't, again, if N and M are interchangeable, which they are at times, in many cases, M and N, even in Egyptian, you know, the M signified one thing, and Nu was the abyss, right? But M signified water in Egyptian. And so, and Nu was the watery abyss. So even M and N are related in Egyptian. So they can be interchangeable in different languages, these two letters, M and N. Also, in English, or in Roman letters, we see that N is just a one hump, whereas M is two humps. So they're related by the fact that they have humps, you know. I mean, they can be interchanged, I think. So it's very clear that, that's a common thing when you look at all the different languages, that M and N, M is a lot like N, and vice versa. So Mount Nisir could be Mount Misir, which is like Mashu again, M and S. We come back and over and over again to the same idea. Now, where the name Kuti came from, the Chordeans, that is what I've just been looking for now, right? And we've got the connection to firewood and a cord of firewood, and the connection to the people called the Kurds, who may have, in fact, given the name to the unit of firewood, it would appear. So it's quite a thing to research. In Hebrew, the word NSR, which is Nisir, you know, if we leave out the vowels, in Hebrew it means eagle or vulture or plank. So even it has the meaning of wood, Nisir, in Hebrew. Right? So there we get the word Mount Kuti again, or Nisir, which is either a cord of wood or a plank, depending on which word. So it has a beautiful correspondence once again. And Uzengili is also known as Nazar. Right? We also saw that it was known as Mashu, but it's known as Mazar. Well, was it Mashu? Let me just think. What was it? Yeah. Or something similar to Mashu. But Nazar, it's known as Nazar, which is similar to Nisir, which is just with different vowels, right? Mashu. Mazar, yeah. See, Mazar, Uzengili is known as Mazar, but we just saw it's known as Nazar, so the N and the M are interchangeable. Again, we see that. So, I mean, there's the example right there. In this case, we see the interchangeability. There's the specific example that's applicable in this very case that we're talking about, that M and N are interchangeable. It's shown in this very case of the town called Uzengili, which is also called Mazar with an M or Nazar with an N. And that's it for today's study. It's January 19th. 2025 of the Common Era, and it's 21:14 hours Canadian Eastern Time. I'm Ward Green. I love you very much. I'm feeling much better today. And thank you so much for listening and watching. And in my behalf, this is Sissy, and this is Star, saying bye for now. And today we studied Chapter 12, Paragraph 8 of the Arc of Urartu to the Orient Express, which was found in Part 2 of this particular article. We're fast approaching the end of this article, but that's enough for today, I think. That you can see what kind of research is necessary to do all these things, to find all this information and correlate things. So,